to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay this man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Owl. This is Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 475. NASDAQ futures down 46. So not much going on here this morning so far. Individual stocks, we got Boeing up $2. Not much happening in the Dow here. We got J&J up $1 as they... I just shudder, Matty, whenever I hear this stuff about this vaccine. And I don't... this is my... Maybe if I don't know, maybe I'm held to a different standard here because of the creatures I'm on the show with. It's possible. If I say something messed up, you're not the least bit shy about telling me, which is fine. That's what we're looking to do here. Kevin sure isn't. Carl sure isn't. I mean, and yet this weekend, all I did on, for some reason, I was stuck listening to people and reading stuff. And all I'm doing is sitting there going, why don't the rest of the people have somebody kind of critiquing them? Because everything they say is BS. And to a certain extent, and yet they just wander on and on. It's like, I mean, you never, how do you shamefacedly go on national TV or radio and just talk about crap that, you know, is absolutely untrue or unproven? Or I'll be nice and say non-rigorous, as my old economics teachers used to say. It's just, I'm sitting here reading about prices this weekend. I sent out a couple of articles about prices going up on the consumer side, and everybody's sort of seeing it. And here's a lady, Amelia Lucas, and Kevin sent back another thing about grocery prices here by Megan Durison and Deirdre Hipwell. Deirdre, that's an interesting name. This is from Bloomberg, and they're talking about corn, wheat, soybeans, blah, blah, blah. And they have this incredible ability or desire to trace this back to the reasons for it. Now, Procter, and this is from Amelia Lucas. Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola became the latest companies to announce price increases are coming to help offset rising commodity costs. Most retailers will pass on the higher cost to consumers who might not even notice the difference because of the savvy methods deployed by these companies. This is what you and your bro would do. You'd sneak an ounce out of the barbecue sauce without telling anybody. The pandemic has almost given consumer giants more pricing power, but consumers have put their trust in big brands and have a little more cash in their pockets. All right, now what's wrong with that? Just out of the clue, what's wrong with that? Knowing what you've learned about economics from listening to the show ad nauseum.
Well, I mean, I was typing when you said it, but what I heard was you have inflation in grocery prices, but you have more cash in your pocket. I heard both of those things, which to me are contradicting. If one's inflated, then the cash in your pocket's inflated too.
Well, I mean, the reason why people raise prices, Manny, is because they can't.
Right.
It has nothing to do. Anybody who thinks that you raise prices only because the prices to you become higher, God bless it. There's got to be a night class in economics in your neighborhood. Please go take it. The only reason why people charge as little as they do is because somebody else is charging that little, and they can't exist if they charge more because nobody will buy it from them.
That's right.
I mean, why do people get this idea that the reason why the Procter & Gamble and Coca-Cola executives wear buttoned-up shirts and ties so their heart won't pop out of their chest? I mean, what are they thinking about? The reason why you charge what you charge for Coke is because if you don't, Pepsi's charging less, and people will say, gee, Coke's $5 a bottle and Pepsi's $1. I think I'll buy a Pepsi.
Right. Even if I like Coke better, I think I'll get used to Pepsi.
Yeah. So this whole idea that because some farmer has an increased cost and the increase of something and something in cornflakes causes Kellogg. No, you raise the price of Kellogg's cornflakes because you can. The idea is that you price yourself, if you can, You price yourself at the spot where you get the most money. Okay? Now, granted, you have to cover the costs over the in the long run.
Right.
Although in the short term, your costs bear nothing, have no resemblance whatsoever to what you can charge.
That's exactly right. Yep. You can worry about your margins or you cannot. There are people that price things and lose money on every unit, but they're trying to get market share. There's tons of strategies that have nothing to do with what your cost is.
And so when you write these, why do they have to continually say, why can't you just say Coca-Cola raised their prices because they could? Why can't you just say that?
Well, it's not as zippy of a headline, but
no, but I mean,
it's funny.
But the whole point is, and here's the math. I mean, if you go into a Walmart, if you go, you think that these people are philanthropic? They're not. Okay, so if the guy in Walmart says, "I'll tell you what, we're going to raise everything in the store," which you don't normally do because some stuff's more competitive than others. But if you could, what you'd do is you'd raise everything in the store by 3%. At the end of a month, you'd say, "What were our sales?" If the sales were up 2, it's a good month. Because you raised it 3 and you only lost 1% of sales, right?
Sure.
So you ended up with more money for less stuff. So you're maximizing. So you end up saying, okay, now what will it be next month? Now, if you can, and if you're really smart, if you're really in an area like education, for instance, higher education, if you're really smart, you raise the price by like 20% and people all fall over themselves to give people loans to pay the 20%. which is even, I mean, when you think about it, that's why if you know economics even a little bit, this stuff is insane what you see. Okay, let's wait a minute. Nobody can afford the 20%. So instead of having the college just have nobody show up, which is the way you should do it, right? Because then they'd lower it back down again.
Right.
We're going to find a way to lend people the money and tell them it's worth it to them even at this higher price to go to college, even though we're not sure it is or isn't, and probably isn't at 70 grand. So we're gonna lend them the money. Okay. And we're going to tell them it's a worthwhile investment. Well, that's even more ignorant, especially when you're charging them 6 and 6.5% a year on some of the private loans. So you wonder why people, you know, do this stuff. The explanation they get is there no? I mean, I'm not saying there should be any kind of censorship. You got to be able to write what you want to write. But have we got to the point where there's such a lack of competition in the news media that people can write this crap and people there's not somebody after them saying, "What are you talking about?" It's not like we have 4 newspapers in Chicago anymore. So if somebody wrote a stupid article in the morning and the afternoon, it's all people talked about in the other papers,
right?
Saying this guy's an idiot. Or his ladies, and we weren't met too many ladies in those days. Speaking of which, did you know what Jeannie Morris, who died recently, was the actually? This is what's even more bizarre. I mean, if you're African American, you forget all about Wando Phillips, right? Because he was the guy who actually talked Branch Rickey into bringing Jackie Robinson in. When he died, nobody cared. Black people didn't care, and because they'd forgotten. Well, now when Jeannie Morris died, everybody who's women's rights. I mean, did she have one person at her funeral? She basically broke the barrier for women in sports reporting. I mean, for every single lady who's at the sideline or doing the basketball report and stuff owes something to Jeannie Morris. I'm not, not crazily, but to a certain extent, you at least should know who she is. And when she was writing an article. Because Jeannie Morris wasn't much of a writer, and they wanted him to write an article. He goes, "Why don't we just have Jeannie do it? She knows as much about football as I do. She's been there the whole way. Just let her write it." Well, they made her on the column. She had to put Mrs. Jeannie Morris, right? And they put her column not on the sports page for a while, but in like the life section of the paper. I mean, it is so scary. But the idea, I mean, the amount of non-truth, the amount of weird stuff going on. I mean. So yesterday I listened to, I don't know what possessed me, but I left earlier because I was doing taxes and stuff yesterday, of all things. And instead of my usual Face the Nation, I listened to on the radio going home, I'm listening to Ad Issue. Is that local? It must be local.
I don't know Ad Issue. Is that on BBN?
Yeah, but it's on before the other one, so it's on like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock or something. Why don't you Google it, see who the hell was on yesterday. So they get this African-American lady on there who's at this obviously big job someplace, and of course I missed the name. In the job, but
it is local, yeah. At Issue, yep.
And she's talking about this endemic racism. And now everybody knows that there's a lot of stuff that shouldn't be, and certainly for a long period of time, absolutely shouldn't have been, and we're making progress and not enough. I mean, it's got to be, and I'm not so sure how anybody has a different view of that, but we are making some progress, making more than we ever have, and by the way, it's still not good enough. We need to do better. We know that. And in all spots, not just black people, but Hispanic people, but Asian people, and even poor white people. Nobody really gets a break in this economy right now. I mean, we need to help pretty much everybody at this point. So she's talking about this endemic racism, and I'm going, and talking about vaccines, and talking about neighborhoods that are underinvested in. Okay, and again, somebody before they opine, in a very nice voice on national radio, or this wasn't national, it was local, but you need to have a clue. I mean, so the idea that somehow or another there's this incredible conspiracy to not get African-American people vaccinated, I don't know who would even think that way, man. And I don't see any of it. I mean, in any area that has people with less money, less transportation, it's gonna be a challenge, and I think we've done a lot of stuff to try and meet that challenge. Maybe we could do more. We could always do more. But the idea, I mean, to listen to her, you would say, you would get the idea that somehow if a black person showed up at the United Center, they'd say, come back in a week when the white people are all done. I mean, that absolutely is not true. I can't believe it would be true.
I actually think it's been the opposite, to be honest. In Chicago, I can't speak for the country, but in Chicago, it seems they've gone out of their way to serve minority communities, poor communities, to the point where they're regulating vaccine distribution by zip code. So if you live in a, this was a few weeks ago, if you lived in a predominantly white zip code, just based on the metrics, then you were ineligible for the vaccine because they wanted to make sure that they had plenty for the poor and minority zip codes. That doesn't mean there's not white people in certain zip codes and there's not black people in certain zip codes. So it wasn't divided specifically by race, but it was overwhelmingly, you know, Humboldt Park or Little Village or whatever, you know, 89% Hispanic or whatever, they got to go ahead of, say, Lincoln Park, which is, I think, 70-some percent white. And so I would say it's the opposite. Now getting people to want to do it because of the skepticism and the concerns that black people have had with the government and vaccines going back, you know, 100 years, I get that. But to think that they've been denied access, I would say it's actually been the opposite. They've been – people in this city have been going – I would say out of their way to give them first access.
The only reason is that the issue is that a lot of people in the Hispanic community, I imagine the black communities, since they've had to essentially go to work every day, they probably already all had it.
Well, that's probably true.
Which, you know.
I'm not saying all, but no, yeah, certainly a high percentage.
But you wonder why do people take the, and then we started talking about communities. First of all, I mean, I think that you need to, I don't know how you do this, but especially in some of these minority communities, and it's getting to be some way in some of the, when you think about investment, and I can understand why you do this, because companies are doing this too. I mean, obviously the big white company, when you think about investment and you think about money, instead of thinking about a product or an investment, what's the first thing you think about? You think about the government. And this is not good. This is absolutely not good. That's not how this country was built. And it's not going to be. When you talk about communities that have investment, you still live, even though you've moved, you still live in an area that at one time was not a good area. And picture your old house last week. That area, nobody lived there in 1975. I mean, let's put it this way. No wealthy white people lived there in 1975. And all of a sudden, because of the L-stop and so forth, and people wanting to live back in the city, these areas, little bit by little bit, started what they use the term gentrification. And people spent a lot of money. The homes were in bad shape. People bought, you know, remodeled. Every one of them needed total redo, blah, blah, blah. None of that money was government. It was individual people going to the bank, using their money, and buying a place for $30,000, putting $80,000 into it, and selling it for $200,000. And going, hey, this is cool. this is business, right? Our country to this day, although it's getting less and less, is supposed to be private enterprise. And the reason why, and there were people in those areas that were a little tricky, and if you went a little too far past the, where shall we say, where the frontier was, you had a problem with your bricks disappearing at night and maybe places getting robbed. I mean, the idea, I mean, Dr. J knew some girls that moved into, actually right where you are, Mayersville North, by North Avenue and Matt Damon. They were broken into four times in the first month. And they've said to the policeman, hey, this is crazy. The guy goes, what the crazy about it is you moved into other people's neighborhood. What are you doing here? He says, well, what do you mean? This is the up and coming neighborhood. He goes, it might be, but not right now. It isn't. And, but I mean, where do people, this idea that, I mean, would you and I ever want to go put a convenience store in Inglewood and man the place every day? Nobody want a life like that. Because how many times are you going to get robbed a week? I mean, come on.
Good question.
I mean, nobody wants to drive. The idea of that somehow everybody is remiss for not investing in a place they don't want to be, where there's murders every night. I mean, come on. I mean, what are we talking about? Now the government's supposed to somehow do it or give people money? I mean, the idea is that we know that those areas, in terms of geography, are spectacular areas. They have L transportation. They have expressways. Some of them even have the RTA stops there. In terms of geography, there's nothing wrong. Yet the area, nobody wants to be there. I mean, the idea is you must make the area in such a way, the amount of money from private investment that can somehow come down on a place when it becomes the place to be is way more and more efficient than the government ever does. And if all of a sudden people decide that, oh my God, there's 3 square miles in Inglewood that all of a sudden are safe and there's a Green Line stop, we're heading downtown right in the middle, and by the way, there's a decent school here. We don't want government doing that, man. You want individual people doing that. The difference, how quickly you can get a loan and go to the bank and start building a place. Do you really want a government program to have to wait for a bill for 5 years to get somebody some dough and to go in there? I mean, what's more efficient? I mean, it's not even close. So the idea that somehow that there's been this, that it's people's fault, it's somebody from the outside's fault that is not making an investment decision in an area they deem unsafe, it's not their fault that the place is unsafe. You and I wouldn't buy anything in there, would we? The only thing we would do is what people, some big people are doing, of course you can't find the names of them, is every time a piece of property, you know, goes on a tax sale or something, there's a group of people that buy them. So someday, somewhere, if you're on the 80-year plan, which you could be, but I'm not anymore, if you're on the 80-year...
I don't know if I could be either.
Well, when you start pumping out kids, you will. Because they'll get you, right. Then you worry about your kids and grandkids. But I mean, the University of Chicago did this. DePaul did this. DePaul owns all the stuff DePaul bought in the area. Why do you think they bought it? Every time some place became a crap hole, they bought it. It was near the school, right? So the University of Chicago.
Yeah.
Because they made a decision, we're never leaving here. We're hanging with it. So they kept buying and buying and expanding, and pretty soon they own the whole place. And all of a sudden, the area becomes good on top of it. So they lucked out. Okay, DePaul way more than University of Chicago to this day. The University of Chicago almost pulled it off. The Olympics would have been there. They came close, right?
Right. And they still could pull it off. You said, it could be it's a long game.
Yeah, it's a long game. But you and I aren't on that plan. For a while, a lot of the investors were families from Ireland, buying all this stuff up. You and I can't. We're not on the list that every time some lot goes vacant, we get to buy it for $100 or whatever it is.
No.
But other people are. So, yeah, I mean, do people think? Now, the question is, are they foolish? Is Chicago going to go down? Is Chicago going to be another Youngstown? Is it going to be another Detroit? I mean, there's areas in the city where I mean, in this country, where the cities are never going to be what they were, where they really need to say, okay, you see that those 8 square miles around the edge of the city? Let's just tear them all down, get rid of the utilities, and, oh, by the way, make parks out of it or a forest preserve. I mean, there's never going to be people who are going to want to live there again. I mean, is Youngstown, I mean, what's the population of St. Louis down to? I mean, are they ever going to be 1 million people again, or 800,000, whatever they were?
The city of St. Louis is down to 308,000.
Yeah, and what do they top out at? For a while, they were bigger than Chicago.
Yeah, they were.
So I mean, you're not. So I mean, we need to understand our economics, and we need to understand that the most powerful mover and shaker of economics is individual investment when people think they can make a profit.
Yeah, it looks like St. Louis City. Now their metro area is, you know, is still pretty big, but St. Louis City is down, like I said, to 308,000. It topped out in 1950 at 856,000.
Yeah,
that's crazy. So they were up near a million people in the city. And it wasn't that long ago, you know, 70 years ago.
And at one point, I not the turn of the 19th or the 20th century, but I think they were bigger in Chicago at one point.
That, I think you're right about that.
Well, I mean, Chicago was, when they were 3 million people back in like 1900 or 1910, I think they were one of the top 10 biggest cities in the world. Now we're not even in the top 100, are we?
No.
I don't think we're even close.
Yeah, Chicago currently in the city is 2.7 million. It looks like Chicago topped out in 1950, just like St. Louis. So that there was some, that was when everyone started going to the suburbs, it must have been, right? In between 1950 and 1960.
There's a sneaker in there, though, is that we booted out, we built the Dan Ryan and the Eisenhower and the Kennedy.
True.
I bet we booted out 200,000 people.
But yeah, Chicago peaked in 1950, just like St. Louis, and it peaked at 3.62 million. In 1960, or sorry, 1950, and then in 60 it was 3.55, and in 70, 3.36, 83, 90, 278, 2000, it went up again to 2.9, and 2001, 2.9, 2002, 2.9, and then it's kind of hovered between 2.7 and 2.9 now for the last, I don't know, 12 years.
Well, the amount of growth after Diane M. Canal opened, in like 1865, didn't we make it to almost like 3 million by 1900 or something? It was a spectacular growth there for a period of time. Yeah.
1890. So in 1880, there were 500,000 in Chicago, and then by 1900, 20 years later, it was 1.7 million.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
So here's a good one, Matty. Not exactly a good thing. We're not jumping on a vehicle here at the PTI buffet, but. Our Stocks and Jacks buffet is, by the time 1900 came around, when they were thinking about building the sanitary and ship canal, with a million something people, we had more sewage than any other city in the world, including London, that had like 3.5 million people. Because the stockyards, whatever was left from the cows, shall we say, and the tanning places up on the north side, we basically had a sewer system that was like a normal 3 million people town.
Wow.
And because we had how many cows and pigs were in town on top of it.
Right.
Not to mention the tanning facilities and all the other stuff and factories. And it was really the ability to get rid of sewage in this town was, I mean, it's a fascinating read if you ever read the history of Chicago is really the history of water management and sewage management. I mean, if you look at it from that level, shall we say, from Ed Norton's level, it's just a fascinating thing. I mean, what was done? I mean, some of the stuff, because you're talking about the Chicago River, which essentially was a prairie stream, a slow prairie stream, and on the north side they actually had to dig a hole from Lake Michigan and pump water. Somewhere around Ford, man, to pump enough water in the river to get it to flow fast enough to clean this thing out past the tanneries. Because otherwise, it wasn't enough flow. It just was stagnant.
Right. Wow.
But the thing would, they talk about the Cuyahoga River burning. The river burned every night, every day. they had ships or little boats or whatever you want to call them. They weren't ships. They ran around the city and scooped the burning stuff into the middle so it didn't get near the sides. It's going on every night. I mean, walking across one of the bridges, you had to hold your nose. That's how bad it was. Until they turned the flow the other way. And, because, I mean, the river used to flow into the lake, obviously. And, then there was a couple instances of cholera, and they said, well, we gotta turn around the other way. And which is, you know, was an amazing feat of engineering at the time. And, of course, people in Joliet didn't like it so much, but they, the typical Chicago, maybe real quick, because then we're gonna break with Mr. Flanagan in a second. Typical Chicago, they had the thing all dug, and of course it was in quartz. And Joliet's saying, "Hey, you guys, we don't want your crap down here, literally." And so one night, I asked a bunch of aldermen. The thing was done, and it was just this big pile of boulders and stuff, holding the river back from its basically new home. And all these guys went out and got trashed. And these aldermen got on the bulldozers and busted through the rocks. And they said the first bland of plop, and landed in the, and it took, the water was so bad in the river by the time the thing got in. Well, once it started moving, there were no locks, right? So it's, the water started coming from the lake, so it started coming a lot faster. And they just opened the thing up. It was your classic better to ask for forgiveness than permission. So once the thing was gone, the courts never said, well, no, you got to dam the thing up again. And people in Joliet just were screwed. Although, by the time it got to Joliet, it was somewhat clean because,
right.
I mean, bacteria will pretty much eat anything. Anyway, SP Futures down 375, NASDAQ Futures down 48. Come back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks,
stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Member of the Board. SP Futures down 3.25, NASDAQ Futures down 50. Of course, we came flying all the way back Friday from the tax announcement on Thursday. You might ask yourself, why the hell could that, how could that be? But, we did. I mean, that's what we did. I guess the Fed, who knows, we'll look at some of the numbers. I'm not going to prejudge, although I guess I sort of just did, whether the Fed was involved or not. Dow futures up 33, individual stocks. We got Boeing up $1.73. That's one of the reasons why the Dow is up here. We got Goldman Sachs up $1.45. Doesn't take much. Over in, Europe, we've got DAX down 5, call that flat. FTSE up 12, that's 0.1%. Can't round up 12.2%, so not much going on over there. Markets have Actually, other than some movement in the morning, they've kind of been quiet during the day. Nikkei up 105.3%, Shanghai up down 33. That's almost a full 1%. Hang Seng down 125.4%. Obviously, the big issue in India is this COVID situation, and those guys are in bad, bad shape over there. I mean, they're overwhelmed. Hospitals, you name it. They're just, you know, they have issues, shall we say. Bonds up 2/32, 1.59. The Bund minus 0.23, again, creeping towards zero. We wonder if they get there this time. Japan positive 0.07, UK positive 0.77. We've got oil down a whole buck, well, down a buck, Chuck. 61.13, that's 1.6%. Brent down 1.13, 1.7%. Natural gas down a penny, 2.71. RBOB down 3 cents, 1.95. We've got gold down a buck 90, but still 17.75. Silver up a penny, 26.09. Copper up 7 cents, 4.41. Copper still is relentless. Boy, after earnings is FCX, which is it's not an ETF, but it's a company that always has been associated with copper. So it's kind of like the stock that people trade when they want to trade copper. Although in the last several years, they bought a gold company, so it's not as clean of a play now as it was. But it dropped all the way down into like 35 range after earnings. Now it's back up to 37, 38, the Freeport FCX. Anyway, we've got the crypto. We got the Bitcoin up 3,900, but only up to 53,550. And it topped out around 64,000. It was down under 50 last Friday. Now it's bounced back from there. Betty, what do you got for us, Trevi? Weather sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like no delays so far on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson are looking good as well. Traffic starting to pick up, but no accidents to report. Dan Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good. Lakeshore Drive's all clear as well, so enjoy a nice, quiet commute if you're heading in. Absolutely no delays to speak of on any of the area expressways. Off the expressways, looks like there's one crash in the area. It's actually, I take that back, it's actually on an expressway. Tri-State, I-94 southbound at Lake Cook Road up in the northern suburbs. There's a crash blocking the right lane. That's causing a bit of a slowdown that happened about 15 minutes ago. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful spring day today. Lots of sunshine, a high of 73. Right now it is crystal clear and 42 degrees downtown, warming up significantly this afternoon to the low 70s. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast today and a high of 79. Right now it's clear and 65. In sports, the White Sox are rolling. They've now won 4 in a row after sweeping Texas, doubling the Rangers up yesterday 8-4. Cubs were in a pitcher's duel all the way till late in the game when the Brewers blew it open, and they ended up losing to Milwaukee 6-0. So after beating them 16-2 or whatever it was on Friday, they dropped 2 in a row on Saturday and Sunday. Diamondbacks with a big-time day yesterday, Chief. They had a doubleheader against the Braves and outscored Atlanta 12-0 in the doubleheader, winning Game 1 5-0 and Game 2 7-0. So as we take a Monday morning look at the MLB standings, the White Sox are now in second place after winning 4 in a row at 12-9. They're a game and a half back behind first-place Kansas City, who unfortunately for the Sox have also won 4 in a row, so the White Sox haven't gained any ground during this hot streak. But Sox at 12-9 looking good right now.
I thought Kansas City was supposed to suck.
Nah, they're pretty good. They got a lot of good young players. After they won the World Series, they traded off a lot of their veteran guys for young guys because they knew they couldn't pay them, and now those young guys are starting to come up.
But some teams get young guys that are good young guys, and other people just get young guys.
I guess that's true. The Cubs after winning 4 in a row themselves, have now lost 2 in a row after losing 2 out of 3 to the Brewers over the weekend. So the Cubs are 10-11, down to fourth place in the NL Central, 3 games back of first place Milwaukee, who obviously won 2 in a row beating the Cubs. Lastly, the Diamondbacks, after sweeping that doubleheader, are back to 500 at 11-11, 4 games behind the first place Dodgers. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They're in action tonight against the Heat. That's a 7 p.m. tip. Suns played yesterday. They lost to the Nets 128-119.
Do we have Mr. Jan?
We do.
Jan, how are you?
Hey, Bob.
So if you had to put a power rankings up there, I would put the Cubs, even though it's a likable team. And I think they've done good. They've managed to fix Arrieta again. I think he's I got to put them nowhere better in the middle of the pack. Are you?
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be, I mean, Now, they could acquire somebody at the trade deadline and be better in the second half. I don't know. But I think, to me, they look like a middling team, a team that's going to be sort of around 500, maybe in the wild card race. But I don't see a team winning, you know, 90-some games. Do you?
No, and they have absolutely the worst superstar I've ever seen. It's Bias.
Well, he certainly was not good last year in the shortened season, but a lot of guys weren't good last year. Christian Yelich had a bad year. Bryant had a bad year. Bias had a bad year. There's a lot of big-time players that didn't play well last year, so sort of giving him the benefit of the doubt. But the first month here, he's hit a lot of home runs, and he's driving in a lot of RBIs, but his batting average is terrible. His strikeout rate is terrible. He doesn't walk at all. And I think he's even taken it to the defensive side a little bit, and he hasn't been quite as good defensively. Part of that, I think, also is the cold April weather, which a lot of these guys, even Ryan Sandberg, notoriously was horrible in April every season. And then he would, by, you know, mid-June, his numbers were back to normal.
I never saw him take his eye off the ball, yank his head back, and have a huge swing and miss the ball foot.
Baez has had that issue for his whole career, and then in his hot stretches when he plays really well, for some reason he tightens that up, and you're like, wow, maybe he figured something out here, and then he seems to revert back to it, which I can't understand.
I don't see how, if you have any sort of coaching, there's got to be a difference between the hierarchy. Maybe it's changing the managers, maybe whatever it happens to be. There's something about the Dodger organization where they've had, what, like very few managers, and there's no doubt in anybody's mind that the manager is going to outlast you as the player in the Dodger organization. Where the Cubs, they're not. If you screw up, they fire the manager. And how many hitting coaches have the Cubs gone through, and every one of them are going to say the same thing we do? Hey, when it gets to two strikes, you got to touch the ball. And these guys don't pay any attention, we fire a hitting coach.
Yep.
We do that every year. I mean, maybe we should get rid of the player instead of the hitting coach, and maybe somebody might listen to them.
Well, they're starting to do that. They got rid of Schwarber. They got rid of Almora. They got rid of Fowler. Next,
Fowler was just a free agent.
Well, true, but they could have signed him. They have big decisions to make here with Baez, with Bryant, with Rizzo, with Contreras. I mean, all these guys might be gone. I mean, or they might sign one of them. They might sign two of them. They're not signing all four of them. They obviously chose to not go the direction of Schwarber and Almora. Those guys are gone. So, you know, I think they're agreeing with you, Chief. I think they're going to get rid of half of these guys.
Yeah, the only difference is they're down to three or four guys in a major market area. They can afford to pay these guys.
I would agree. They had Yu Darvish on a contract they just signed with him 2 years prior, and they traded him for pennies on the dollar because they didn't want to pay him.
Well, let's just say the Ricketts. I never thought that what's his name Reinsdorf be the best owner in town, but he's turning into it.
He's looking pretty good.
He's looking pretty good right now.
By the way, before you get into it with John here, you did get a couple of tweets from our guy Robert Dwyer, who listens in, and you can follow us on Twitter at @StocksTheLetterNJocks regarding some of the neighborhood reformation stuff you were talking about. He says, Chief, you're skipping over the most important part regarding gentrification. That would be the millions in kickbacks to the aldermen. It's not quite as pure capitalism as you claim. You know the story and probably the principles involved with the Robert Taylor renovation.
All right, that's not what I was talking about. I'm not talking about taking that. I'm with him, and if he wants me to, I will actually have a segment someday and Jana would want Jana in with me of how that all transpired. I'm talking about areas where we lived, where you lived till a week ago, where we lived the house by house, because I was part of that, because Robin had a place, and I've known Bill Murphy forever. And I looked at places on our side of Armitage back in 1978. All that money was private money. And the only kickback to an alderman was trying to get your building permit quick enough. It had nothing to do with the Cabrini Green getting the deeds out of HUD or CHA or any other kinds of stuff. We're talking about private ownership to private ownership. I mean, would you agree, John? I mean,
and I think really Cabrini Green was kind of driven out of that neighborhood ultimately by all of the private investment that had flourished around it.
Right.
It became sort of, you know, it was an inefficient way of running things that became the outlier. And I think private industry or private investment kind of made it, you know, obsolete.
I will say this to Robert, though, and I to be honest with you, if he knows more or can point me in a direction, please do. Maybe John does. what's happening in some of these areas where all the properties go empty and abandoned, and people are essentially, I'll use the term hoarding or putting together, that will have to be somewhat different than Lincoln Park or those kinds of areas, because, I mean, Lincoln Park, there's buildings that you and I could have walked in, Maddie and Jan, and we had some guy who owned it, and we said, hey, you know, what do you think? And the place is basically a bleep hole. And he goes, well, I need like $40,000, which would have been ridiculous in those days. And we might say, well, we'll give you $35,000. The place is a scraper. Or every room needs to be redone or something. Or it might have been a fire in there. God knows what. In like my place, Matty, you would have two families. There'd be another sink hung in the dining room. And there'd be another stove in there. And the two families would share a bath. I mean, it was really something. I mean, you could imagine, I don't think my place is big enough for me, much less two families, for God's sake.
But it's like New York.
I mean. Yeah. No, so, I don't think Robert fully understands how good of a question that is, depending on the various areas. I mean, I don't know what we would do if we decided, you know, let's find a four square block, area in Inglewood with some local people involved and so forth. Let's take the 30% of the houses that are left, let's remodel them, let's build some new ones, let's try and make a community out of this. Because there are areas that are like that. 83rd Street, east of Ashland is becoming like that. I mean, there are areas, there are pockets of serious investment on the south side. But I think, John, it's done by individual people. I don't think that there's a governmental agency that's helping people redo three flats in single family homes.
No, I mean, when that strip mall at 55th and that'd be Wentworth, you know, there's a big strip mall at the northeast corner there, the Dan Ryan. When that thing went in the 80s, that was sort of a kind of a wake up call, because there'd been nothing like that around there with Taylor Homes so close by. And that has kind of survived, and it's mostly, you know, there was city help with that. I mean, the alderman was deeply involved in getting that thing built. But overall, that, you know, it was the tenants that kind of made that thing a success.
Yeah,
it was a
commercial
investment, so.
I think if we were to pick an area like that on the south side or the west side, you're going to find that out of the 25 abandoned lots in our two-block area, somehow 15 of them are owned by God knows who. Somebody from overseas or some company or somewhere. And I don't know how you get that property out of them in any kind of a, unless you find some way for the city to condemn it and sell it to you. But the city's never going to do that if they're big enough, because they've probably been paying the city off a long way. So yeah, what Robert's talking about is absolutely true, but it's become more specific, I think, don't you think, Jan?
Right. I mean, I think one of the best examples is the placement of the Obama Center in Jackson Park. And I see that as a really horrendous lost opportunity to make a difference somewhere else on 55th Street than in Jackson Park, which, you know, that's not the place that needed redevelopment. What really needs development is the place, you know, 55th Street between King Drive and the expressway.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Which is just decimated. I mean, and they put all this money into the Green Line L station there, which very few people ride. It's one of the lowest turnstile turners, I think, on the whole system. But they put all this money into rebuilding that station. And I thought, well, now if they had some reason for people to get on and off the L there, that would be the next step. And the Obama Center could have gone into that. It could have gone anywhere. I mean, the thing is, they had money, you know, private money, public tax breaks, whatever, that could have made it go in any place they wanted it. And instead, they took over Jackson Park, prime park land in an area that doesn't really need redevelopment or even much improvement. And now, if they can't get the Obamas to build their center in somewhere like 55th and Lafayette, I don't know who else you're going to expect to go in there either. So,
well, let's just say, Jan, if he's still with us after the COVID, because he had all kinds of issues, health issues. There's a guy I'd love you to meet, and I can't even, let's just say on the football Sundays up at the Tripoli, there were two Al's. There was a white Al and black Al, right? And this, I won't say which one this was or is, but it was a high-end dude at this, CHA. And he always threatened to come on the show, but he couldn't do it while he was still employed. And he said, I have stories to tell. And, I would ask him, questions like, and this is for our questionnaire here, how exactly, I mean, I was always, you know, I mean, this is a Jan Flanagan question, but how you ended up getting a deed that was, you know, a big, huge deed of some, whatever that means, of the CHA for, like, Cabrini Green, and maybe HUD was involved. I don't even know who held the deed, whether it was HUD or CHA. How you get that down to getting Matty Weber a 30-foot lot there and get the deed over to him? How you even work that through the system? I have no idea. And plus, when you're doing this, when Cabrini Green went down, if people care to remember, which most people could give a rat's behind, the idea was, oh, no, we're not just getting rid of poor people and replacing them with rich people. Well, yeah, you are. But no, we can never say it. Just like the prices I was talking about earlier, John, we can never just say Coca-Cola just raised prices because they could. There's always some huge BS story about how, you know,
yeah, they had their arm twisted.
Yeah, they had their arm twisted to do it, right? So I said, well, how the hell, the whole idea that there's still as many, not as many, but some percentage is low-income housing and blah, blah. I said, I don't see any low-income housing. What'd you guys do? He said, well, you're just not looking in the right place. And I go, all right, there's got to be a story here. Well, if you go all the way over, what's the street that our former contributor, Steph, lives on? Is it, what's the, begins with an L, Matty?
Larrabee.
Larrabee. Well, there's a lot of public housing on Larrabee, right?
Right.
And it's low level. It was never part of Cabrini Green. So, as my buddy says, now it is. So, it essentially got annexed to the Cabrini Green area in some ways, some place that was totally distant. Now, all the people who live there, the low-income housing, are considered the 20% low-income people that were still going to be in Cabrini Green after they sold it off to richer people. I mean, Matty, you couldn't write fiction like this. I mean, it's so sophomoric, it's so third grade, and yet these guys pull it off. It almost brings a tear to your eye, doesn't it? All right, wait a minute. I don't see any low income people. You're just not looking far enough. I'm like, really?
They blend better into the crowd than they used to.
And then I said, well, how the hell? The same question I asked on here is, how the hell do you get these deeds all the way down that fast? I mean, it takes forever for, you know, you don't just, you're bailiwick now. He goes, what makes you think you need a deed? And I go, what? He goes, it could just be a 100-year lease. I said, I thought they only did that, the Mormons did that in Hawaii. He goes, ah, we're doing that here too. I mean, you couldn't write fiction like this, John. I mean, this is how we, I would love to, if I could stop the world for 2 months and just dig through all the crap that has to be going on. But I'd have to have you with me because I wouldn't understand what the hell I was reading. That whole area, what's the area by the river, the industrial area? Who's the group that's doing that?
Oh, the Lincoln Yards thing?
Lincoln Yards. I can only imagine how somebody got the right to turn industrial property into whatever they damn well please. And some other poor guy who was owning a trucking area in there forever doesn't have the same right, so he's got to sell his stuff to Lincoln Yards for half, you know, 50 cents or 40 cents on the dollar. And what did we just give this Lincoln Yards, and who did they pay? I mean, what happened there? We're going to put 60,000 people in an area without even a bus line or an L line? I mean, what are we going to do there? Made up like New York? At least New York has subways.
Well, that's where Mr. Dwyer is absolutely right, I think, because just to get zoning changes for any of that stuff, and in that kind of quantity of land, to put a parcel of stuff together and to get it zone just the way you want it. You and I could never do that, you know, with a single lot. I mean, or we'd pay through the nose to some alderman or some law firm representing the alderman, you know, to make it happen. And to do it on a bigger scale than that would be out of reach for the average person or even the average developer. So, yeah, you know, there is something to that.
Well, what the area, though, now what happens, this has to do with, I still, even all the attorneys on the show, I'm totally of a mind fart about this reconciliation bills in Congress. Which ones need 60 votes and which ones don't? I've just resigned myself, John, that I'll never understand that. For some reason, I just have a block. Maybe you can walk me through it someday.
No, well, I've just concluded they're moving the goalposts whenever it's convenient. I can't see much rhyme or reason to it. It's just whatever they think they can get away with or what they can push past without doing something dire. But that's just kind of gaming the system, really. I don't think there's any predictable way of calling those shots.
Well, in regards to the Lincoln Yards thing, I mean, I know back in the day, this it happened to be, for those of talk about the history of Chicago, the Stockyards were on the south side. All the rendering plants, all that really horrible stuff, was right around, roughly around 47th to, what, 35th and... Union Stockyards went from what, 47th to 39th?
Right, and 39th used to be the city limits, you know, back until 1889 or whatever. So the Stockyards were technically not even in Chicago, so they kind of ran their own show, which is why they were able to develop as they did, really.
Well, and then you had your Darling and Company had a rendering plant, and Swift and Company, and all those people had the processing areas basically around there. And all everybody emptied all the crap into the South Branch of the Chicago River, which was something Creek or whatever, Bubbly Creek.
Yeah.
Well, somehow or another, and I don't know if how they got the stuff up there, because back then it must have been by train, I guess, John. But all the tanning companies were on Goose Island or close to it, which is on the north side. So it's probably what 8 blocks. It's 8 miles away. So somehow or another, I guess you could just take them right down the river, right? I mean, that's probably the easiest way to do it. They just dumped basically these nasty old hides on a barge and somehow got them up to, but all that stuff was going on and Goose Island was pretty much that whole area, Kingsbury along the river. They even had further north, Jen.
The one like around Cortland and Elston, there's that huge rendering plant until recently.
Yeah.
Maybe it's still there.
Yeah.
Sunk up the entire north side.
Well, then you had the steel company, Finkel's.
Finkel's, right.
And then you had, the General Iron, which just closed, the recycling place. But all that stuff, you can still go buy buildings, even though they're office buildings now or something, or electric companies. It'll say, you know, Matty Weber's Tannery on the front of the place, right? I mean, there's still a few of those left.
Right.
But anyway, that was how that all... But the danger was, as the north side got gentrified, as we were talking about, that this whole area would become less industrialized, and Chicago wanted still some industry. And we're going back to, I think might have been Richard Jay, could have been Blandick, could have been somebody in there, Jane Byrne. Somebody in there, matter of fact, you know who else was there, Jan? You remember this. On North Avenue was a Procter & Gamble. They made soap.
Yeah. Right.
And I think some of the ingredients for the soap came out of these rendering plants. Anyway, so the whole area was pretty much industrial. That's why you could always find a hooker there at 3 in the morning if you really needed one.
I think you still can, Tom.
Not walking the street like they used to.
No.
Dr. J and I used to have to kind of fight them off in the morning when we came into the show. God, man, it was, you know, whatever. It was, the girls would be, hey, you two boys. This would be like, it'd be one of these nights where it's like 90 degrees and everybody's all sweating. You're like, yeah. come on, give us a break. We're going into work. You can't be going to work this early. We'd be like, if you got caught by the light, you'd be arguing with them because they wanted to. Anyway, those were the days, as they say. So all this, somewhere along the line, somebody passed an ordinance that said you couldn't in this king, I don't know what the essentially is the boundaries for this new area, right? So that this area could not be, you couldn't have a retail establishment and you couldn't have people live there, correct? Goose Island and somewhere up the river. That's why if you go onto Goose Island, Matty, that's why you'll see the Restaurant Depot. You'll see a huge plant that washes all the napkins and tablecloths for all the restaurants. Probably, I'm sure originally was some mob operation. I don't know if it is now. You'll see there's a repair facility for the auto place, right?
The recycling center.
Yeah, but the auto place, the showroom couldn't be in that area, just the repair facility, right?
Right.
So all that was, so this was a carve out of the city. I'm going to say it has to be 30 years ago, Jan. I mean, I don't know what mayor it was. They said, no, this area is essentially going to remain industrial. So for a long period of time, if we had a trucking dock in there, you had like the the fire department repair facilities for all their fire trucks was in there. You had a place that did, who was the wrecking company? Hennepin Wrecking had like how many square blocks of their, you know, wrecking vehicles and bulldozers were in there. Those are the kinds of people, but nobody could say, I'm building a high rise here and putting people, because it was essentially yanked out of the zoning. You couldn't do that. So what happened with these Lincoln Yards people is somehow or another, they changed all that around and they said, oh no, now you can do whatever you want. So they essentially removed a special zoning area, right? I mean, what would that be? If just industrial, would it, what would that zoning even be called?
Industrial.
Just industrial. Yeah.
Light industrial or your commercial.
So like I-3 or I-2, I mean, whatever.
Right. And, you know, the same thing can be seen all along the North Branch of the river, where you've got these spectacular riverfront homes in places. If you told me 50 years ago that that's going to be full of people's homes with your balconies and everything else, I would have said you were smoking something really powerful. But that also, you know, had been carved out, and it was supposed to be commercial. It wasn't supposed to be pretty. It wasn't supposed to be desirable as living space. The city kind of decided, and the zoning reinforced this, that we want this to be down and dirty. This is where the money is made.
Yeah.
And we want to attract other places like that to these areas. That's really what zoning does. I mean, it focuses and concentrates the energies of the city in ways that are strategically picked to maximize benefit for everybody else. And, of course, you know, that isn't really how zoning works anymore.
Well, but when you see, you know, the Finkels, and I'm not a walking air tester, but I mean, all of a sudden, the amount of money, the people moved up there. They don't care if the steel place is 5 miles away. It's too close. I mean, you move and everybody else has got. I mean, you know, the yuppie families. I'm not saying they're right or wrong. I mean, you're paying huge taxes and you got, you know, a metal recycler 3 blocks away. But the metal recycler was there when you moved in. You know, type of thing. So anyway. S&P futures now only down a buck. NASDAQ futures up down 34. So we're coming back. Be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson at Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson at Realtor.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Lone North Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tim Al. It's Mayor Weber on the board. We have Sir Jan Flanagan on the phone. SP Futures down a buck. NASDAQ Futures down 34. So not much happening this morning here or around the world. I mean, we've got a slow day as we had a down day last Thursday because of the capital gains thing, and we had a big update back on Friday. And you might ask yourself, again, you know, it can be difficult to trade, John, when you got big boys trading. I'll say again, you. I mean, because clearly, unless you're really under a rock somewhere, you see that this inflation is starting to percolate, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now, in the economic sense, you ask yourself, okay, now, if I think inflation is going to come up, and I'm going to bear with me for a minute here, there used to be, in normal times, well, shall we say in economically normal times, a formula for interest rates, all right? And this pretty much goes back to the caveman and loaning people stones for his house and getting their stones back later in the year. Right? And it basically says your real rate of interest. Now, if you go out, you know, 5 years, 10 years, even 1 year, your interest rate should be the real rate of interest, in other words, how much you charge anybody to use your money. Now, granted, that's going to be a market rate or should be a market rate, except when the Fed's involved. And you also have to add or subtract the difference, people's anticipation of what the whatever it is, the stones or the money or whatever is going to be worth at the end of the year. In other words, if your inflation rate and whatever your medium of currency is 3%, and if you loan somebody $100, I'll use $100 or 100 stones, you're going to need $103 back just to break even. Right, because there's a degradation in whatever you gave the person in terms of whatever it is, whether it's cigarettes, whether it's stones, whether it's cash, if it's money. Plus, whatever it is you're actually charging them to use your money for the year. So if your real rate of interest is 3% and your inflation is 3%, you want the 3% for using your dough, and you want the 3% that the dollar is going to be worth less at the end of the year, or the stones, or whatever. And it's very simple. Your rate should be 6, right? This is not brain surgery.
Yeah.
This has been a formula since cavemen started lending people stones. So the only thing that could mess that up would be the Fed or somebody, if somebody is in a central area is controlling the currency, or if it's a place where they make the stones, where would that be? That's the quarry, right? I mean,
rendering plant.
The rendering plant or the quarry. You know, so you ask yourself, okay, the last 2 weeks, is this finally, is people are comfortable talking about it? For a while, they shut people up for years. Well, now people are actually talking about it. It's becoming a normal conversation in financial press. There was articles we sent around this weekend to everybody on the show and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so at the end, last week, you'll see bonds going up, not down, which means interest rates are actually going down, not up. So you ask yourself, wait a minute, how exactly is that happening? Well, if you look in the last 2 weeks of the federal balance sheet, on April 21st, federal balance sheet is $7,820,000,000,000. You back off 2 weeks, and you're 708. So the Fed, and does anybody think there's a lack of liquidity, has put $120 billion into the system in the last 14 days. It's pushing, what, $9 billion a day into the system. Why, John? Just so they can tell people there's no one. What are they doing? I mean, but what would cause somebody to say, hey, hurry up, go buy $9 billion worth of bonds today, because otherwise the system is bereft of money. Does anybody think that that's even remotely the case? I mean, what causes somebody to make that phone call? I mean, who are they? Are we just driving asset prices up so the 50 most powerful people in the country can bail on their stuff for a month before everything collapses? I mean, what are we? There's something behind this. It's like a Chicago zoning change. Like, we had people write in. We don't just raise the whole thing for that whole area so everybody who owns a piece of property can benefit. We change it for like one person. It's up to them to take advantage of the other people. Now, granted, the other people get something better because the price went up some, but still, it's not the same of us just saying, we're getting rid of it. You can come to us with a high rise where people are, come to us with a food store, whatever it is. You're on your own now. Just come get the permit. We're never going to do that in Chicago, and we're never going to do this in Washington now. And what are we doing? What is the end game? I cannot figure it out. The more I look, I mean, clearly at one point we had in 2008, when this mess all started, and maybe with some of the COVID stuff, we had extraordinary times that we needed to do something, and we needed to get tied some people over, even if it meant going in Dutch for a while, and we're just going to have to take the hit. But now, did we do too much? Do we really need some? Who's monitoring this stuff? And who's the end user? As long as the end users are making out like a bandit, it's okay. The right people. And what at this point? What is the motivation for half of the stuff they're doing?
Well, it makes me wonder about the whole philosophy behind the lockdowns, giving the impression that they're loosening up and then they tighten down again. To me, this really just looks like kind of an inflation control. It's a way of tamping down appetites and consumption, and making people kind of, be willing to wait before they make a purchase, or before they can not even make a big purchase, but to go out and do anything, or buy a restaurant meal or a movie ticket or something else. It has the effect of discouraging purchasing power. And to me, that has to have some kind of strategy. And I mean, it would be a very effective strategy if you were trying to fight inflation, to just make sure that you didn't have that kind of end of the machinery moving all the time to drive up the prices. If people aren't buying stuff in this great number.
Yeah, but they are. I mean, you close the bars, in the liquor industry had their best year ever.
Well, there goes my...
Yeah, I mean... Right?
But, I mean, look at, travel and everything else. You kind of roll it all in together. I have a distinct sense that people aren't spending money they're probably spending more money than they think they have because they're not working, maybe. But it isn't like they're conspicuously consuming stuff.
Well,
maybe at a certain level they are.
High-end
houses that change hands and so on, that doesn't seem to be affected by it. But overall, I really think people's appetites have been beaten down.
Well, that's the problem, John. I say this all the time, and people know that. I mean, whatever it causes people to reach over and go snap if they still on a radio. The U.S. we're starting to find out that maybe I might be right. Is it possible? When you look at any kind of a high end animal, which humans are, you can't put your finger on exactly why the human body works. You don't know if the brain started to tell the heart to pump, or the heart pumped to tell the brain to tell the heart to pump. I mean, you look at it, and it's quite an amazing system, and nobody can quite design how the hell, when a human body works, it's an amazing work of art, whoever put it together. Economy is the same way. I mean, a free market economy, which ours has been to varying degrees for a long time, you can't tell somebody to deliver the you know, the bread to the store that has the sausage. In order to make a sausage sandwich, you need bread and the sausage. The fact is, if you look at all the people making the decisions, somebody's going to say, God, what if somebody wants a sausage sandwich? The guy who sells the sausage, he probably needs bread in that place. I'll get him some bread. And they can sell bread in there. And then I'll sell it to him at, you know, 50 cents a dozen. And by the way, he'll sell it for 80 cents a dozen, and we're both happy. And as the guy who went in and bought the sausage doesn't have to go somewhere else to buy the bread. That's what, there's literally millions of decisions, what, every second in this country regarding, yep. People either consuming stuff, looking for convenience, looking for better product, looking for a better price, and there's people that anticipate what other people want, and they move to meet the need, even before you even know there's a need, right? I mean, that is an incredible system that made the U.S. And you know, so there's a few other places in the world that are like that, some Western European companies in Japan and so forth, that make, or even in China, nobody has to tell somebody to bring sardines to the town square. He knows people are looking for sardines, and there's no other booth, and if I got them there, I'm going to sell them. I mean, it's a way of anticipating what people want, and that's how the market works. But now all of a sudden we have so much of this intervention. No, we'll close that place. We won't close this place. We'll close this place. Oh, no, you guys can't go to work. We'll make sure that the meat company, well, one guy's got COVID, you can't open up for 2 weeks. Whether or not that was justified or not, you know, the history books will tell. But now all of a sudden we've got an economy where we've got all these little arrows in various parts. Wait a minute, Matty Weber's supposed to run a 100-yard dash. God, he's got an arrow stuck in his ass. Well, God, he can't run. he can barely walk. You know, so now what does that mean to the race? Well, now there's only four people. In order to have a race, you need five. Well, now we can't have a sprint. I mean, all of a sudden, one little blip along the way or a few little blips all of a sudden starts to create other blips. Because people never really, and I don't, I mean, you never watch the 100 decisions that have to go into just for the bread showing up at your local store. I mean, it is so complex and so beautiful to look at and study that we don't really appreciate it, right? It's just like, right. you don't appreciate your health until you don't have some, right? Right? Correct?
No, it's absolutely true. And when you look at something like the chip shortage,
yeah.
And how that's affecting even the bread and sausage movement too, you know,
right.
It's much more subtly coordinated now. I mean, there's invisible stuff that's at work. It's so small, but it's so crucial that people don't even really think about it too. But I was struck when I went to buy cat food a couple weeks ago, and all these shelves were empty at Pet Supplies Plus, you know, the discount pet food stores. Like Purina is experiencing difficulties with its supply chain. It's like, well, what exactly does that mean? Are they missing chips somewhere in their truck dispatching, or that they don't have enough carcasses to make food out of, or exactly what's going on here? But I just thought that was unusual. I've never seen anything like that in my life. You could always buy any kind of cat food you wanted, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, so what has happened? How is this breaking down? And now you look at the monopoly stuff, which I am always ragging on. I mean, one thing people have, if they have is their criticism for meeting, I say, oh, that chief guy, I was just talking about this monopoly. So, well, look at the formula I just gave earlier regarding, before you came on, John, regarding, you know, your price increases. If I increase the prices 5% and I get 2% less volume, I made out like a bandit, right? So now look at the chip supply to your automobile companies. Well, everybody, I think, is going to say that the price of new cars is up, what, 8 to 10% from last year?
Yeah.
It's got to be that much. Okay, so if they're going to sell 5% less cars, I'm going to say the profit to the bottom line just went up. Now, in a perfectly competitive world, that would never happen, right? Because the prices would not go up 10% because of a increase in cost of whatever it is, the chip. It would be if there were enough companies around to be competitive, that price would be stickier. But it's not. There's not that many car companies that people want. The interesting part is you go by the Manny. What is with BMW these days? There's a BMW dealer on 159th Street by Audrey's. The guy's got to have 1,000 cars. He can't sell any. Well, I'm sure he sells them, but he can't. The place, He's got more cars than anybody. Now, Audrey's cousin is a used car dealership. Guess how many cars he's got for sale?
Not many.
Five. And he sold two of them on Saturday. He can't buy them. They're not to be had at any kind of price that's anywhere near rational.
Wow.
He said guys on that have come by his lot that own other used car places that have paid his listing price and driven the car off his lot to put on their lot. Because they're maybe in a neighborhood where people have more money or something. He's in a smaller town that people aren't all that wealthy. So you're not going to be selling a $35,000 used car. But see, if somebody has a neighborhood where they are, the guy's coming to his place and buying them off his lot. He goes, I cannot find inventory. It's scary. Because
I haven't owned a car for a number of years. I've rented them when I've needed them. And I was just looking, for the heck of it the other day on prices to rent a car from Enterprise, Avis, whatever. And I would say the daily rate has doubled before taxes in the last year. Because apparently all these car rental companies liquidated their fleets when they couldn't rent.
Yeah.
They had to shut down their offices and everything else. Well, now they've got some appetite among consumers, and they don't have the car, so they can charge pretty much whatever they want.
Allegedly.
So who saw that coming? It's like with haircuts, too. If you put a place out of business for 6 months, and when they come back, they've got to make up that hole somehow. They're going to raise their rates. So.
Okay, but then you can't, at least when you got me listening to you, Jane, you can't say that they have to make up the rates.
Right.
They may want to.
Right, right.
But the fact they get away with it, true, means that there's no competition or less. Matter of fact, on the way in this morning, I was waiting for Maddie. They're talking about, funny you should mention the used car. That was a big story on News Radio 78. That in Hawaii, where you couldn't go to Hawaii for, what, a year?
Yeah.
Evidently, everybody, you can pay as much as $700 a day for a rental car over there now.
If you can find one.
You can find one. So, yeah, I mean, now we have, well, we don't have as many rental companies as we used to have. How many did we let by each other in the last 20 years?
Hertz went belly up, right? I mean, they're around, but they bankrupt.
Yeah, they went to somebody, and I think a lot of the names, the Alamos and all those kinds, there's only like two or three real big
National Avis. Yeah, yeah, probably four, maybe.
Yeah, so they, but I mean, yeah, in 4 months from now, if you can't rent the damn thing, and all of a sudden people are paying through the nose for used cars, you're going to liquidate it, right?
Sure.
So, I mean, but it doesn't take much for the system to not be working.
Right. I mean, those supply chain glitches, I mean, for lack of a better term, have huge impact on what people feel they have to pay or what people feel they can get away with charging. And it's totally manipulated at a level that you and I can't really intervene in.
Well, it's manipulated if all of a sudden government's involved in the fix. I mean, normally, in a world where all of a sudden people sold off their rental cars if we just came out of a regular recession, guess what? People are just going to go buy a bunch of new cars, get a fleet deal from GM, and all of a sudden you got new cars, you're ready to go. I mean, it's not a bad thing, but now it's, because this always happens, yeah, and there's always a glitch somewhere else, but they're easily fixed, right? I mean, if all of a sudden, I mean, nobody wants a rental car in Chicago, and yet, for instance, Manny, where do you? I mean, you guys, I'll ask you. I don't know if you know. Where is there a place? Because Manny's company does a lot of, they used to do a lot of shows for customers and so forth. Is there any city in the country now that actually has a big convention planned, Orlando or Vegas or anybody?
Yeah. So. In Florida specifically, they're starting to come back a little bit this year. Some of the road shows and conferences and things like that. But none of the, it, my understanding is the big ones in Vegas are still virtual, for 2021 with hopes of coming back 2022.
When you say shows, are these, for those that don't know, they used to all be in say a McCormick place or similar. But now, I mean, you can have a pretty damn big show at the Marriott or the Conrad Hilton. You can have thousands of people there that don't even need the convention hall. The hotels are all that big. Are the ones like in Florida, are they convention center big, or are they just big hotel big?
Big hotel big in the Florida case.
So nobody's actually opened the convention center
yet. Convention centers that you go to, like in Vegas, that are huge, 100,000 people, those, my understanding, are not open, at least not the shows that I go to.
Okay. So what was the, remember the story about the, was the, what was the computer show, the Comdex?
I think, yeah, that sounds familiar.
The, well, when I used to go to Vegas more and they had the Comdex, all these, I use the term geeks, but regular, you know, computer people. And, so one of the, very attractive ladies that I was playing blackjack against, and I picked that table because of her. I'll admit that, John. What can I say? You know, it's not like I'm going to deny it. And I said, "What do you think about the Comdex show?" And she goes, "Well, let me. You seem like a nice enough guy, so I'll be straight. These guys show up in one shirt and one $20 bill and don't bother to change either." How's that for a shot across the bow?
She should write a book.
I bet she could. You know, I'll bet the dealers and those people, they absolutely could tell you a difference in the personalities of all the different shows that come in, whether people are generous.
Oh, yeah. Generous. The houseware show versus the dental association or the radiologist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. Or the manufacturing guys, I bet they spent a fortune.
Or the auto show. Or
yeah. The most, the worst, well, this is going back a long time. I used to like to play blackjack. I haven't played in years, but one of the most amazing things they had, this is back, you know, when we still had, when you bought a car, like, yeah, you bought American, right, if you're a blue-collar guy. Well, this had to be in the 80s, and we're maybe late 70s, and they had a convention in Vegas of, was the foreign car companies. You know, Toyota, and, well, at that time, it wouldn't have been Nissan, it would have been Datsun, right? Well, they got these guys, I think they were from Japan, and they're playing blackjack. And I mean, this is in Caesar's Palace, so they must have stayed in like the nicest place in Caesar's, which was the nicest place back then. And they're playing blackjack, and we're talking $500 a hand. And guys are playing two and three hands. And they didn't, I'm watching these guys, they didn't even know how to play. I mean, I was kind of a semi-card counter, but at least I knew the basic strategies backwards and forwards. These guys are hitting when they shouldn't have been hitting, and you start losing three hands in a row at 500 a pop, or worse yet, you double down when you shouldn't, and you lose a grand. I'm going, this guy went through like 25 grand in 10 minutes I was watching him. And he didn't bite an eyelash. I'm thinking, how much money are these guys making on these Toyotas? I'm like, but let's just say that group, I'm going to say the Caesars did very well on that group. They weren't the Comdex. They were changing. How the guy, I mean, the guy pull out an envelope with like, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 in there and just wings it on the table and just, you know, well, you got chips. Half the time it was money play. I'm going, wow. I should be this guy's nephew or something. I mean, well, I made my money the old-fashioned way, Betty. I inherited it, right?
Yeah.
So, Jack, how do you? This is kind of more of a Kevin question, but how long does it take? I mean, I don't think we've ever been in a position that I can recall in this country, except for maybe the era of oil embargo, and that was how long ago. But that was just a question of price, and still stuff was still available. Of course, remember Nixon's wage and price controls?
Oh, God.
The stuff that it actually affected, you could just not have price controls on those. So at least Nixon was smart enough to know that if the price got in the way of actually the economy, then you just worry about that. You know, if gasoline, if you put a price control on that, there wasn't going to be enough gas, well, the hell with that. Just let that price go wherever it wanted to. So it was kind of a name only. But if there's thousands of these little problems all over the place, do you think that we've gotten, you know, less competitive to the point where people don't sit there and say, no, I'll fill that need, I'll put a plant up, or I'll buy a plant and I'll start making this? It seems like it's taken quite a while with the toilet paper and paper towel and stuff. Are people just not willing to make those kinds of investments with the government so far involved, or am I leading a witness here?
I think it's, pretty much what you're up against. There isn't the same kind of entrepreneurial spirit or the freedom to be an entrepreneur as there was 50 years ago or even maybe 30 years ago. That I think people see that they're, unless they've got, you know, endless time and patience and money to spread around, it probably isn't worth it to try to, like, start something up or, you know, live out your dream of building some product and marketing it and everything else. I don't think there's enough, you know, time in people's average lifetime to do that unless you're already in a setup where you can't fail. And I find that, you know, it's a horrible thing. I mean, that's kind of what we have to settle for, because this is not what made the country big and prosperous. Certainly, it was that people were doing this all over the place in every little corner, and it was a healthy way of kind of using the energies that people had and funneling them in productive ways. Now I think people realize they're beaten before they start, unless they've got somebody backing them up. Somebody is going to take the hit that I can't afford to take.
Well, it's
just a small group of people who could do this and who have the dreams and the expertise to make it work.
Well, are we being jaded? I mean, there's no question that I've gotten jaded by this. I mean, I look in the mirror and I look in the mirror and say, gee, your hair is not as dark as it used to be. You're not as skinny as you used to be. And by the way, you're more jaded than you used to be. I mean, I've always been a realist about myself. I mean, right? I mean, I don't know if most people are, but as a trader, you are. I mean, hey, I've been short for 3 days. The market's done nothing but go straight up. You better wise up or you're out of here. I mean, right? I mean, that's what happens when you trade for a living. Your own money, other people's money, hopefully you do a lot better at. But what I'm saying is, right now, it looks to me like no matter what happens in this city, Target's a winner, the big guys are winners. But if you and I pick the wrong business, if we pick a local restaurant or something that maybe we can bite with our teeth and get involved in, who's to say that 6 months from now we're closed for 6 months without any rhyme or reason while they're still selling everything at Target? Or why you can still eat at this place or whatever.
I'm with you.
I mean, the idea, I mean, I don't see how you ever would commit that kind of money if you had it. And if you didn't, nobody's going to lend it to you. I mean,
right.
I mean, I can't imagine getting a loan from a bank that's also regulated that is this, that people decided never give loans to small people. I don't see how the hell you get a loan. I mean, how are you going to do that? I mean, you could have enough on credit cards where you go down that route at 20%, but I don't know what place is going to return you 20% now, especially if you get closed. I mean, it's just weird, Jim. We'll talk about more about it next week.
Yep,
but
that's for another day.
S&P futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ futures down 29. Come back with Mr. Mike Hart. Take a look at what's happening with the VIX going down, and is there opportunity here? Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment.
Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howley, Mr. Brett, member of the board. S&P futures up, down $1. They were down more than that earlier. They've come back. We've got the NASDAQ futures down 29.50. Individual stocks in the Dow, they're blowing up $1.90. We've got Goldman Sachs up 2. Nothing else moving all that much today. Stocks, Dow's up 60, however, partially because of those two. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX up 2. Call that flat. FTSE up 12.2%. CAC round up team up 18.3%, so not much going on over there. In Asia, Nikkei up 105, that's 0.3%. Shanghai down 33, that's a full 1%. Hang Seng down 125.4%. Obviously, the big news out of Asia is the massive COVID problems they're having in India. On Friday, was the way we review, Dow up 227 against, made back, in the S&P, we made back more than we lost Friday numbers regarding the capital gains. We came right back on Friday, even though not exactly sure why, because the capital gains numbers are still the same. S&P was up 45, NASDAQ was up 198. Today, bonds up 2 basis points to 1.58, went up 1 basis point, minus 0.24, and in Japan unchanged at positive 0.07. Oil down $1.03 to 61.11, still reasonably comfortably over 60. Rent down 113, 64.98. Natural gas down a penny, 271. RBOB down 3 cents, 195. Red gold is down $7 now to 1770. Silver down 7 cents at 26. And we got copper up 6 cents to 440. And our favorite crypto, Bitcoin, up $4,300 now, 53,887. It kind of bounced 150,000 briefly. It kind of bounced off that number, at least so far. Maddie, we got for us Trevi Weather Sports.
Coming up on 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways for a Monday morning. No major issues or delays to speak of. Not a lot of red out there. You'll see some near O'Hare on the Kennedy. You'll see some as you approach the circle on the Ike and on the Stevenson. But no accidents or stalls to report. Southside expressways looking good. Off the expressways, there's one thing of note here. It's on the north side of the city in Lakeview. Beginning today, April 26th, work is scheduled to close eastbound Wellington just past Sheffield to Mildred until Saturday, May 22nd, for about a month or so. But traffic coming from Sheffield is still able to access the main entrance to Illinois Masonic Hospital. But there will be road construction there. Everything else all quiet. Weather today, lots of sunshine, a beautiful spring day. Finally, some nice weather coming in. Partly cloudy with a high of 73 today. Right now it's clear and 44 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, overcast and a high of 79. Right now it's clear and 66. In sports, the White Sox have now won 4 in a row. They beat the Rangers 8-4 yesterday. Cubs were shut out by the Brewers 6-0. They've dropped 2 in a row after winning 4 in a row themselves. Diamondbacks swept the Braves in a doubleheader, 5-0 in Game 1, 7-0 in Game 2. NBA basketball, Bulls were off last night. They're back in action this evening at Miami to take on the Heat. That's a 7 p.m. Chicago time tip. Suns lost to the Nets 128-119. Chief.
So why was Pat Hughes on TV yesterday?
So I think that it was either some sort of planned off day for the Cubs announcer, Boog Sciambi, the new guy, and they thought it would be fun to put Pat in there, and they've done that in the past a little bit with Len Casper doing radio and stuff like that. That could be it, or I don't know if Boog Sciambi still has some national obligations because he does. He was an ESPN guy for a long time. So maybe this was just a built-in day where he was doing an ESPN thing, and so they brought Pat in, which was pretty cool to hear Pat on TV.
Well, who does the radio then?
They had Zach Zaidman, who is Pat's pre- and post-guy and fill-in guy in the fifth inning.
He's not bad.
No, he's not bad at all. I've known Zach for a long time. He's been with the Score for probably 20 years. He did Bears pre- and post-game for a long time, and now he's done Cubs now. I think this is his fourth season.
So what's the matter with Matt Weber?
Good question. I've never did play-by-play. I don't know if I would be good at it or not.
I think after a week you'd be fine.
I think it would be fun to do, though. God, that's for sure. Talk about a coveted gig. Those guys come up through the minor leagues just like players do.
I told you the guy, real quick, Mike, my significant other, of course, has me watch, since she loves the real estate stuff, has me watching these ridiculous things on Sunday morning where flip or flap, this I mean,
love it or list it
or whatever it is. I don't mind that one so much because I like the British girl.
Not that you noticed.
Not that I noticed, but I love the accent. What can I say? Plus, she does a great job on that. But, you know, you watch this stuff, and I don't mind, you know, learning something about it as well. But when you start talking about beachfront property in Carolina, I kind of lose it. I have no desire to go down there at all for beachfront property. Anyway, just
especially to get your place wiped out by a hurricane.
Well, you know, they have them up on the stilts, like 10 feet high. Like, if that's going to stop, you know, some, I mean, anybody thinks that's going to work, you're out of your friggin' mind. But anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, well, it probably wasn't worthwhile talking about it. But the one of the guys is looking for a place in Des Moines, and he's the voice of the Iowa Cubs.
Yeah,
he's moving
AAA
to
affiliate of the Chicago.
Yeah, and he and his girlfriend, and she's Filipino from San Francisco, and she wanted to live in downtown Des Moines where there was some action. I'm thinking, but he wanted to live in the burbs. So he ends up buying his big shack out in the burbs. And I mean, how long if you're good, how long do you land at the Iowa Cubs before you get a major league gig?
I don't know, 3 years, 5 years. I mean, it's not like the major league gigs are opening up every day.
No,
those guys, you know, Vin Scully was there, what, 70 years?
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Hughes has been with the Cubs for 20 seasons or more.
Oh, well deserved.
Deserved, absolutely, but he's not going anywhere. I mean, those guys talk about the best job in the world.
So, Mike,
you
were
6 months out of the year to talk about baseball?
I mean, two things about Vin Scully always struck me as odd. One was he was on with Don Drysdale forever. And all of a sudden, one night, you know, Don Drysdale died of a heart attack in his motel room, or hotel room, and Vince Scully never replaced him. I can't imagine.
Yeah, he'd do the games by himself, 3.5-hour games by yourself.
I mean, an hour and a half, 2-hour games, I can dig it, but how could you do a 3.5-hour game by yourself?
Especially on the radio when you have to fill a lot of dead air. It's not like TV where you can kind of pause and let it breathe a little bit because, you know, obviously everyone's seeing the action. Radio, you really have to be descriptive, and to do that by yourself, it's crazy.
Well, the other one was his greatest line, I thought, Mike. We were talking about some guy injured, and he goes, was Don Drysdale still, and he goes, "And Dan, they say he is like the rest of us, day to day."
By the way, real quick, before you guys start talking markets, we got a couple of tweets here. Robert writes in, "The amount of actual book knowledge, real world experience, and even the hooker comment is what makes you one of the smartest people in the world, Chief."
Well, I don't know about, boy, you know, you think of it as though if you're supposed to be smart, all you think about is all your stuff you wish you knew and you don't.
I know. Natachi writes in, he says, "Actually, guys," this is going back to your last segment, "data is showing that new business applications were way up in 2020, the highest they've been in over a decade."
I'm sure because...
So I know you had some anecdotal examples, but overall, in 2020, people are filing applications for new business.
I think a lot of them are to fill in on people that are gone.
That could be. Or it's people that are out of work, and now they're finally going to give their long-time idea a shot.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when you... back when I was at the University of Chicago, and when I went to Pullman, I mean, there were guys that always wanted to have their own business. They were entrepreneurial sorts, and guys that I still keep in contact with, and terrific people. Simple fact is, most people don't start their own business until they get bleep canned. I mean,
there's a comfort level when you're working, and there's a time aspect of it, and then all of a sudden, you have a bunch of time, you're uncomfortable, like, well, I'm already uncomfortable, let's do it.
Well, I mean, not to get personal, because you're not supposed to on the radio, but you have a side business, Manny, and I won't go into it, but if you decided, I mean, you also got a really nice job. If you walked down on a Friday night and said, "Hey, guess what, wifey? I just told the boss to stuff it today. I'm going in the other business full time. But don't worry, I won't make any money for like 2 years, but 3 years down the road we'll be rich." You better hope she's not carrying a frying pan. But it's just really hard to do.
Yes, it is.
To just bag it, because most jobs are, by the way, we won't have any hospitalization, we won't have any of that stuff. You better not get sick.
Right.
But that's one hell of a conversation. And hospitalization, it's one of the things, Micah, real quick on this, because I'm going to get the other. I've always felt that recently, because of the hospitalization, ridiculous price, And if you're working for somebody, generally they cover it. And if you quit, you don't have it. Between that and the student loans that most people carry, the ability for somebody to tell the boss, take this job and shove it and start your own stuff, or even to make a political statement, is way less than a free society should have. Because people just can't do that. If you've got a student loan and you got your hospitalization at some firm, they got you, buddy.
You feel beholden to them.
Absolutely.
And that's a bad feeling. I feel like, you know, that wasn't always the case, and maybe it was, and a lot of it has to do with, I think, private unions going away. There's a lot of factors that go into it, but when you have a lot of debt, which anyone that goes to a 4-year school these days that isn't fortunate enough to have their parents write a check, which that's a lot of people that don't get that benefit, myself included, and I had to pay for it myself. You feel very beholden when you have a lot of debt to that first job, even if your boss is a jerk, and even if you hate, you're miserable because you're like, man, what am I going to do? I'm underwater here.
Well, when my parents helped out, they weren't rich. I mean, I always had my own car, but it was always a total junk. I kept it running. There was never a day, because I lived at home for a while and always could have gone back there and paid rent, because I'm the only guy. Now, how many guys you know pay their mother rent to live there?
I mean, Not many.
There was honestly never a day all the way through my formative years on the trading floor that I couldn't have walked out and just left. That was the independence that I wanted.
That's very enviable, I would say.
And now I would drive home in my junky car and stay, you know, in a room in my mother's house. But the fact is, I was beholden to nobody. Now, of course, that changes when you have a firm and people that are working for you and have clients you care about, which is okay. But at least for a while, I did it on my terms. Let's put it that way, for a while.
Yeah.
But now the 73 Jeep, you wouldn't believe what I had to do just to get the tailgate to close on that thing. Let's just say we bought the Bondo by the quart, not the pint. But anyway, otherwise the exhaust just came right in the back, Mike, which you didn't really want, you know, just saying. So, hey, what's up with you? How are you? What are you making out of the kind of the market here? We're getting some swings. We had the Fed put in almost record amounts of money in the last 2 weeks. I didn't see a crisis in the last 2 weeks, did you? I mean, there must have been one somewhere.
There must have been, but I missed it as well. The market is falling into the same narrative, which is marching higher, although slowly. It's grinding its way higher. And we're seeing volatility subdued, not at the all-time low that we saw this year, but very close. I mean, we're trading at 17, around 17 right now. We were as low as 15, but it seems like we're really in that range, below 20, above 15. It's an interesting range for volatility to stay in. We know volatility doesn't stay in a range forever. Eventually, it's going to break out. The question is, you know, do we continue to see a market that moves higher? If that's the case, most likely we're going to see volatility get taken out of the system even more, which will be interesting because, you know, for a year and a half, we haven't seen volatility this low. So we're really trending near the lowest levels of volatility right now.
So I know we have this little technical joust going on between us, where I'm sure you're right because you're way closer to the numbers these days than I am. But I refuse to believe, believe everything you say except this, I refuse to believe there's not something wrong with this VIX calculation, because every Friday it goes down a point, and every Monday morning it goes back up the same point, and we're at the same spot. There has to be some screw-up in the way this thing covers the weekend, in my mind. And you're saying there isn't.
No, the market's pretty good at being efficient about that. It's sort of like trying to get a one-up on the market. It doesn't work. There's the inefficiency is already accounted for. And the weekend theta, it's one of those things where everybody knows that there's weekend theta. And it becomes more of a game of pricing that risk over the weekend. You know, is there announcements that may come out this coming weekend that might be priced into the VIX? And maybe you actually see VIX move a little higher in that case. But it's really a kind of...
What happened to our man, Mike? There he is. Mike, you might want to move to a different spot in the room.
Okay.
Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now? That's better.
I can hear you.
Yep.
Okay, so the way theta works is theta is the time value of an option, and the more time you have, the more value that option is going to have. And each day that goes away, the option's going to lose a certain amount of time value because you're getting closer to the expiration. But that doesn't move in a linear fashion, meaning every day it takes 60 cents out, day after day, 60 cents. It's actually, it's very dynamic. So you might see 60 cents of theta one day. You might see 30 cents of theta the next day, 90 cents the day after that. It's not a straight line calculation.
Okay, how close did you, before I jump a question on you, how close did you look or read the announcement from Biden's people regarding the capital gains? Carl was into it more than me, and I had different stuff to do this weekend, so I didn't pile into it as much as I should have. But if it's supposed to be for people making over $1 million a year, right now where you got to pay 43%, 43.6 on your capital gain now.
Right.
If you and I are bumping along, say making 150. And somehow or another, one or the other was me with your advice, you know, some great little stock you told me to buy. And somehow I make $1 million on the stock. First of all, I didn't notice if the thing was long-term or short-term. If the $1 million I made on the stock puts me over the million, does that count as being $1 million a year guy when my average salary is 100?
I don't know. I think it does. Yeah,
I think it probably does too.
Yeah, I would say, you know, the tax man doesn't really care what it should be. He cares what it is.
The other thing is we came back Friday, and, I have nothing but bad things to say about the Fed in the last 12 years where they think somehow their job is to keep the market up for the people who are in charge of this country, and it's not us. And I don't mind the market being up, by the way, because I have a lot of clients and myself. I don't want it falling apart, but I also don't want it higher than it ought to be just because the government's doing something. I want it to be up because it deserves to be up, that people are making more money and that kind of thing. The news on Thursday to where that number came up there. So if you make money, you got to pay 43% if you're over $1 million. But if you lose money, you can only take off $3,000 a year for the rest of your life. It's really starting to get into the, you know, heads I win, tails you lose kind of deal if you're the government. And I don't see how that news on Friday all of a sudden came all the way back. It's still crap news, right? And it didn't change.
Agreed.
On Friday.
Yeah.
Now is it the Fed's job to pour money in on Friday just to make it look like it wasn't a big deal when it is? You know? I mean, is that really their job and their charter? I don't see it in there, do you?
It's not written in there, but it seems to be the subtle rule that they've been following for quite a long time here, which is more money in the system inflates the stock prices, and we know that's the case. There certainly is a lot more money being placed into the system now than ever before. I don't know what economic theory says about this, but this is an interesting experiment that we're trying in real life.
Well, I mean, the issue is that it's very uneven, and I think the people who have access to government are very happy with the result. I mean, if you're like some of the, you know, people in the building that are the engineers or whatever you want to call, that are making the $50,000 a year, and they see the prices going up like they are, and they don't see there's no such thing as a raise on the horizon, I mean, they're horrified. But if it's your and my stock that's trading for 300 when you and I might say it's worth 40. I mean, we're happy as pigs in slop, right?
Yeah. We're not saying anything. We're just sitting on the sidelines letting that thing appreciate.
Yeah, and we're hoping that one of these days we sell it right before it turns, if it turns. But I mean, it's the and trying to pick that top is a real hard to do. Plus, now you have people who are convinced if you're their broker and the stock's trading 400 and you say it's getting a little pricey and they sell it on your advice, God help you if it trades 410 before it goes to 200. I mean, you blew it. You're supposed to know the top. right?
Right, which, of course, we know is an impossibility by the very nature of the market.
Right, but that's what, but right now, I mean, people will constantly, if they buy a stock at 20 and sell it at 200, if it trades 250, they think they lost $50 instead of making
right.
it. I mean, it's a whole mentality that really, I've only seen it like a couple of times. I mean, I saw it in 87. And we saw it again in 2000, but 2000 was probably worse, but it's a mentality that I'm owed this money. I mean, this stock really should just go up every day. If not, I mean, government should do something about it. And you'll see pricing. Some companies I think are doing very well with the pricing. Others, not so much. You know, I mean, it's very uneven, but if it's uneven your way, it's a good thing. If it's uneven not your way, then it's not a good thing. It's, you know.
Precisely. Yeah. And it's really pretty unbelievable that there is this mentality of, you made a tremendous profit, you made 100%, you made 500% on the trade. These are ridiculous returns that we're seeing. Ridiculous in the sense that they're very high when you look at historical returns. You're right. I think 2000, would be the only comparable time where you had assets appreciating so rapidly, and you had the trader base, the retail trading base of the country, really is more worried about what they didn't make on a trade as opposed to what they actually profited from and where to lay that risk next.
Well, I mean, it's funny because in 2000, I was still in the OEX pit, and for the years that led up to that, I mean, I traded and watched the top 100 stocks as they were in the OEX, as the S&P 100. These other companies, we literally, Mike, they'd show a picture of some dot-bomb company, and they'd show some high-rise in Silicon Valley, and one guy'd always go, I think they rented the sign. They don't own that building. Who's kidding who? It was... because they probably didn't. There was like no assets in any of this stuff, and it doesn't surprise me now that you have like a bidding war for Kansas City Southern coming from Canada. Right. Well, what
right.
if some company that just did something yesterday is worth $8 billion, or $20 billion, or $100 billion, or some number? How do you not bid up the value of a railroad? When you've got how many miles of property, how many miles of rail, how many downtown areas that you own, how many locomotives,
right.
For God's sake, you start putting replacement value of that up on the blackboard, showing my age. For God's sake, what is the place worth? You almost can't number it. I mean, in a conversation with your buddy Mayor Richard M. Daley at the club one day, it was after they sold the Skyway. And of course, I was irate, but I wasn't going to, he was wasn't a friend, but certainly an acquaintance enough where we would talk all the time. And, nice guy. I mean, he loved Chicago. I mean, and knew where all the numbers were, but he had an issue with valuing things sometimes. And I'd say, I wasn't about to give him crap about selling the Skyway. I mean, like I said, you're not going to do that to somebody. So I said, they just sold the, tollway in Indiana. And I said, Mayor, they sold that tollway for like $1.5 billion. He goes, yeah, well, they never made any money on that thing. I said, well, it was run incompetently. I said, but if you, $1.5 billion, I mean, really? If you started at the border of Illinois, at the edge of Chicago, your city, I don't think you make it to Hammond for less than $1.5 billion. I mean, we're talking about,
right.
I mean, what's the thing? It's gotta be longer than a quarter mile wide. Is it a half mile wide for 160 miles long, improved? I mean, what is that worth in today's world? How do you even start that clock? He looked at me like he goes,
"Yeah, that's amazing. That's an amazingly complicated question, right?"
He looks at me and he goes, "I never thought of it that way." I go, "God, how would you go about trying to recreate that thing?" But it's got to be. I'm going to say it's almost a half a mile wide. It's got to be 160 miles long, improved. But how in God's name in today's world do you even try and make an interstate highway through all these? I mean, how do you even do that? what do you? It was like another railroad. How do you create a railroad? I mean, who would even do it? I mean,
right. How do you build the infrastructure at this point?
How do you get the property? Imagine yep. condemning like 2,000 miles of when a railroad's what 300 feet wide or something. Maybe. I mean, anyway. So, Mike, what we're in this kind of holding pattern. Does this mean we're okay for another few months? I mean, it seems like the market thinks that way. When what do you think? Real quick.
Well, you know, I don't think we should sit on our hands, and I don't think we should fall into that trap of being complacent. I talk about this quite a bit, but when volatility is low, it's time to really double down our efforts and on keeping an eye on what's happening in the market. Be prepared for a day where the machines aren't just buying. Be prepared for some sell-offs. Be prepared for losses. A healthy market, we see losses along with gains, but nothing goes up forever. So I would say, you know, be vigilant, don't be complacent, stay watching your assets and watch them closely.
Thanks, man. S&P Futures up 75 cents, and the Nasdaq Futures down 10. Slow morning so far. Back tomorrow on Stocks and Jacks.
Hey, guys. What's up, G? Want to go to Tchotchke's, get some coffee?
A little early. I
gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.